The Premier League season is over, but we still have the Champions League and Europa League to come, and Bet365 are offering a wide range of markets, including first, last, or anytime goal scorer. With over 45 million members, it's the world's favourite online betting company. With the Bet365 Bet Builder, you can combine match results, players to score, number of goals, and more to create your own personalised bet. And if you can't watch the games live, with Bet365 Match Live feature, you can follow every moment through live graphics and text. Bet365 is the world's favourite online sports betting company. The app can be downloaded from the Google Play and Apple App Store. Over 18s only. Please gamble responsibly. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Pod on the Tyne. My name is Taylor Payne, and this is your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. With a little change of a squad rotation today, as Sergeant Waffles is away on his sausage tour of Europe. That doesn't sound good at all. He's just away on his jollies, basically. So we've drafted in a special guest, and it's a voice that you'll recognise, a man that we've had on the podcast before, Alex Hurst from NUST. And, of course, as always, we have the wonderful Mr. George Colgan here as well. George, how are you doing?
All right. I can only imagine how very offensive it is to Alex to be told that we're the go-to Newcastle United podcast. And, of course, Alex is also part of the brilliant True Faith podcast.
Also go-to True Faith as well. Also,
yeah, and who are our great, great friends and indeed allies.
Indeed. I wouldn't be doing podcasts if it wasn't for True Faith, and that is the absolute truth. Alex, how are you doing? You all right? How's your lockdown beard? Is it all right?
My lockdown beard's getting there. I was informed by my barber that it is still illegal in this country to get a beard trim.
Is that right?
At the moment, yeah. You can only get your hair cut. So I've had to kind of do it myself. But you've got loads of great products that I hear on the show every week about shaving. So I've,
they're not for your beard, mate. Oh, no,
Alex is
you could go down that route, couldn't you? Yeah, I suppose.
Alex's only request when I asked him to come on the show was that he didn't have to talk about manscaping in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, well, you know, Alex, just a quiet week for you, eh? Just a quiet one. Not much happened.
Yes, yeah, it's all going swimmingly, and yeah, late nights, early mornings, trying to fit things in around real life. You know. It's just been absolutely crazy. It's been, apart from the absolutely disastrous news about the takeover falling through, everything apart from that has been really positive, with thousands of people trying to make a difference in something which is really important to them.
George, how have you been filling your time this week then, now that the takeover's collapsed? You've just been lying around in your smoking jacket?
Just feeling sad.
Fondling moonbeams.
No, just feeling sad, really. Just feeling fondling moonbeams.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, trying to sort of make sense of it and get your head around it, and you know, sort of thinking about what might happen next. And, you know, I think that's one of the reason I was going to try and get through this show without using the phrase "you know," and I was going to get a Donatar producer to sort of actually bleep out every time I said it, but I've already failed and I forgot to mention that anyway. And one of the reasons I think we both thought, Taylor, that it would be great to get Alex on the show is to sort of talk about that and talk about what's happening now. I think we do have a duty to sort of reflect what is or isn't happening in terms of the takeover, and also the impact and effect that fans can have and supporters can have, and, you know, the important role that the Trust has already played for Newcastle fans, and, you know, can do moving forward. And I think that's, you know, I think it's important that people understand the benefit of the Trust, and the clue for this club is in its name, Newcastle United. You know, this is really the only voice that there is to be heard on a national level. And Alex has already, you know, done great work on that over the last few months and longer, and it will be very important moving forward. And they have a very specific role that's being played now, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
The important thing for me this week as well was reading a lot of the stuff on social media and the reactions to what's been going on and the fallout from the takeover. I was really impressed with a lot of people and how the trust was kind of used as this vehicle that we're all going to try and get behind this vehicle because it is the best way to make our voices heard as fans. The other thing I wanted to speak about and I wanted to kind of get people a bit more aware of is exactly what the trust is and what it does. And I know we've had this conversation with you in the past, Alex, but I still get the feeling that there's people who are either not informed well enough about what the trust is and what it does, or they have preconceived ideas about what it is. And I just want to kind of update that information for people a little bit as well. So if you can give us the kind of potted version of what the trust is and what it does to kick us off.
Of course, and for me, and I'm biased, but if I'm, you know, I think all Newcastle United fans should join. I don't see any negatives to joining. The Trust is a vehicle and an organisation that exists to represent Newcastle United fans as a single body to both the football club and the football authorities, in particular the Premier League, because that's the league in which we operate. I mean, the Trust will exist if the insanely unlikely event of a relegation under Mike Ashley happens again. The Trust will still exist and try and represent fans to the EFL or whichever league we end up in. I don't know. Let's not even try and think about that right now. But yeah, so we exist to kind of try and provide a unique voice for fans, and it's democratically elected. We'll have elections every year. There'll be elections later this year. If you listen to this and you think you can make a difference and you want to come on the board, we'll have a lot of plans later this year to try and kind of democratize even further by having committees and subcommittees, and without trying to make it really, really boring, like some sort of like weird sex that has thousands of people trying to make a single decision. Ultimately, what we want to do is represent the voice of Newcastle fans. And you've seen with that petition that went around, which I think it's got 60,000 signatures at the minute.
Yeah.
So that's really positive. That's like 60,000 people and probably more by the time that this goes out, who are coming together to give one unified message of Newcastle United supporters. And I put this in my member update on Sunday. And, you know, we are famous as Newcastle United fans because we'll have a really loud voice. It's a bit of a crude way of saying it, but we'll shout louder than anyone else. When we're at the match, we're in an away end. When St James's is rocking, it is simply the best place to be in the country for football. And yet, when we leave the ground, everyone kind of dissects and fails to unify. And, like, I don't need to give people listening a history of Newcastle United fan action over the past 13 years, but it hasn't gone great. And that's not to try and, you know, put down the people that have tried. And lots of people have tried, and they've tried really hard and put a lot of good time and effort in and have success in some areas. But ultimately, whenever anyone has tried to do something to try and unite people, there's always been accusations of egos or self-interest. It doesn't exist at the Trust. I'll tell you now, being the chair of the Trust is an awful job for your family and for your time. Like, it's terrible for your social life. It's not something I do out of any great pleasure. And I would always try and warn anyone in the future, because I wouldn't do it forever, that it's a serious commitment and it's not much fun. It's a lot of time speaking to people and trying to convince them of things, and like going in and speaking to Lee Charney. It needs to happen, but it's not a particularly enjoyable experience. It's not the kind of thing I wake up in the morning like, I can't wait for this today. So, you know, the Trust exists for Newcastle United fans. Like, the football club exists for us, but that's not particularly unifying. And if you can't get behind the football club, which lots of people feel they can't at the minute for various reasons, you can get behind the Trust. It simply exists for you to try and make our voice louder. And we speak to the Premier League, and we spoke to the Premier League in the summer. And I know we all fucking hate the Premier League at the minute, so I'll say it quietly. but the Premier League did do us a massive favour in the summer, because we met with the Premier League. We said, the other 19 people in this meeting, we spoke to Bill Bush, who, by the way, is an integral had an integral role in this takeover process, reportedly on the board at Chelsea, but I don't know. I'm not going to go into that too much. But no conflict of interest there. But so, you know, we said to him, everyone else in this room has at least had confirmation they're going to get refunds for tickets from the games that have been postponed or, you know, played behind closed doors for COVID. And he said, well, that's probably because they've tried to kick the decision around down the road to new owners, which is true. But he also said, leave it with me. I'll get back to you next week. Within 24 hours, a statement came out from Newcastle United, and I got a call from someone at Newcastle United to say, thanks for that. If you hadn't nudged the Premier League, this probably wouldn't have been resolved. So the Premier League and that relationship that we have with them, like, has been beneficial to I mean, I still haven't got my refund for the season ticket money, but never mind. At least they've said it's coming. And, you know, if you think back to the last time I was on the show with you two guys, that was the major issue at the time. It was like the takeover was happening, but we're being denied of this money. And I did speak to Amanda Staley, which we're going to get onto. And, you know, went in that call with me, and as I'm sure she'll told you, she was like, the first thing we would have done is paid everyone back immediately. And the first thing we would have done is brought everyone back off furlough. So there are things happening at Newcastle United that would love to change. But that relationship with the Premier League is something that we are really keen, obviously, to speak to the Premier League about this failed takeover. I can't promise anyone any answers, but what I can promise you is that if we have 30,000 members or 100,000 members, we're a hell of a lot harder to ignore than 10,000 or up to whatever it is now, because 3,000 people have joined since Sunday. You know, United, our voice is louder. Whether you've got misconceptions or whether they're genuine concerns, number one, I'll speak to you. Send us an email and I'll happily speak to anyone about the trust and try and allay any fears. And number two, even if you do have those, it costs a quid. It's £2 to join and it's £1 a year from thereafter.
Yeah.
What an opportunity we've now got as Newcastle United fans, not just in the next week or the next month. If this takeover doesn't go through and we don't get answers we want from the Premier League, we're going to have to really try and go through some genuine routes. And unless we're united together, we cannot give our detractors a reason to ignore us and reasons to ignore us. And Newcastle United, in my opinion, have done this for years, have used or potentially in previous regimes weaponized the disharmony between the fans to ignore all of them by saying, well, you know, these guys are unpopular. Look at social media, they're getting a kick and they don't represent anyone. We have got to do better than that as a fan base, and we cannot let the Premier League away with this, in my opinion.
I think that's so powerful. That is so powerful, and it's so important. There is power in a union, I mean, to borrow that phrase, but there truly is. And a lot of the time, it's not the sexy stuff, and a lot of the time, you know, stuff might be done behind the scenes in terms of the trust advocating on behalf of supporters on things that are sort of profoundly, you know, unsexy or unnewsworthy and things like that. But then also, they're really important, whether it's ticket pricing or whatever, having a dialogue with the club. But there are also times when having that voice is really important, that it's magnified and amplified. And this is precisely a moment like that. And I would urge everybody to join the trust. I really would. I'm happy to admit that I'm a member, and I think the work that they've done to date has been very important. And we should talk about what's happening now, and let's have a conversation about that chat you had with Amanda Staveley. Why you felt that was important, and where we stand at the moment.
Yeah, I read your piece with interest, as I do. I read all of your pieces with interest, George, on The Athletic, and I just saw, I mean, first of all, the pure emotion that came from that was just so powerful. I think it was one of the most traumatic things I've ever read from a football perspective. And it was one line in it, which was, you know, Amanda said kind of, we need the fans, it's up to fans now to let the Premier League know how we feel. And I felt that as a group, A, that I think represents fans genuinely and democratically and beyond just Twitter, and B, with the links that we have to the Premier League, I thought it would be interesting to speak to her through you, George, and find out exactly how she felt about fans and what she meant in terms of that unifying call and what fans could do. So I thought that was, you know, it was a call to arms, and that's what a lot of people have labelled it as. And it's almost unique in that, isn't it? Because, you know, we support a football club that, like, doesn't even really try to sell tickets anymore. You know, there's no radio advertising or anything like that. It's just kind of like, turn up if you want. If you don't, it's fine. And that was that passion and that energy that came from
fixtures,
that piece.
Yeah,
exactly. And that passion and energy just never has... I don't think, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up George's arse here, I don't think a single article has energized a fan base as much. And I just thought, if we could take that with Amanda a little bit further and find out what she meant and see that she was willing, because, you know, George, I'm sure you can explain more, like how emotional that interview was. You know, I didn't want to, you know, do things that she or her colleagues in the consultant didn't want us to do, and I just thought that phone call was necessary for us to kind of find out the best way to support them. Because forget about me as a supporter, I'm the head of a member-led organisation, and that survey we did back in April
with 96.7% of members in favour of this takeover. It's gone around the world. I've never seen a survey as quoted as much in media. And that my job is to try and represent our members as best as possible. And my members, as Newcastle United supporters, are desperate for this takeover to go through. So if we can help in even the smallest way, that's what we're going to do. And I thought that, you know, that conversation, and let's be clear, the fact that she was willing to talk to me, it's nothing to do with me. It's the trust, and it's George's contact. That just means a lot. That in that interview with you, George, and that conversation with me, it was a genuine conversation. Is more than we've had in the last 13 years, which is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing to say at that point is that there was no hesitation on her behalf about speaking to the trust, and I think that gives an indication about why the trust is important. I mean, if I'd rung up and said, you know, there's a very nice Newcastle fan who I like, who would like to chat to you, then, you know, perhaps there would be that. Perhaps would have been a different answer. But the fact is that Alex is representing an official fans group and representing a lot of people, and again, that's why this voice is important. And is it about doing a recruitment drive for the trust? Well, yeah, exactly. As Alex said earlier, if the trust has 30,000 members or 50,000 members or 100,000 members, people will take it more seriously. And so, you know, that's the point. It opens doors. And you know, I can't sort of re-emphasize how important that is. I think we need to talk now a bit about where things stand, because we are in this very strange situation now. I mean, the whole situation, let's face it, has been weird from day one, going back all those months. But we are now in a very kind of peculiar position where, as of last Thursday, the consortium trying to buy the club announced their formal withdrawal from the process. And yet here we are, where everybody is still announcing their commitment to the deal, which is really quite strange. And how you know, the takeover itself, or the purported takeover, whatever you want to call it, picking a way through it, you know, amongst all the noise that's kind of surrounded it, good and bad, has been very difficult. And that, sadly, in some ways, hasn't got any easier now that it's over, because it's over and it's also not over. The last thing I want to do, I've said this repeatedly, the last thing I want to do is provide people with a full sense of hope. So let's try and sort of examine where things stand now. So they pulled out on Thursday, but there was a very quick recommitment, if that's the right word, from firstly Amanda Staveley, and then from the others connected to the group, and then indeed from Mike Ashley, that there was still a commitment to this deal. So what does that mean? What does that mean if they've pulled out? So maybe, Alex, maybe from your perspective, I'd like to hear what you sort of, what you think about that and about the sort of strange position we find ourselves in now.
I think there's two things from a trust perspective. There's number one, what can we do to help this takeover go through? And that news that you've just said there, and that update is like, it is promising. It's, you know, what is promising than it being completely dead, you know, anything above that. So I don't think it's quite a case of, you know, it sounds like it's back onto me. But there's two things. Number one, we want to try and help with the takeover process. And even if the takeover doesn't go through, things have to change with the Premier League. This shouldn't happen again, both to Newcastle United or, to be frank, any Premier League club. And we're going to be reaching out to some of the other supporters' trusts to try and get them to lobby the Premier League as well. It's not just about Newcastle, this. You know, I spoke to someone in government recently who's kind of been trying to keep me up to date from their end, and they said that everyone in government pretty much just sees the Premier League as a law unto itself. And that's not right. So from what you're saying there, you know, great. If there's any chance of doing this, it's great, because I think everyone, us three, everyone listening, Mike Ashley, everyone knows that the immediate short-term health of Newcastle United relies on this takeover going through. We're now 4 weeks away from next season, and it's just unthinkable to think that we're going to be kicking off again with the same gang in charge. And if there's anything to be done that we can do to help in terms of lobbying government to try and make a change, whether for the short term, the long term, we're going to do it, because this is, and you mentioned it there, George, going back to right from the start, it's just been weird. And part of that weirdness has just been, you know, the inability of the Premier League to communicate. And, you know, Richard Masters, we've heard him a couple of times doing other events or in front of the Select Committee of Parliament. kind of pushing it, and even then just giving absolutely nothing away. Well, things have got to change, and it goes back to what we had a chat off air, George, before. If there were no Newcastle fans, there would be no takeover. If there were no football fans, there would be no Premier League. So the Premier League needs a reminder of who it actually exists for.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think that's the sort of, I don't want to say the key part of this, because obviously, you know, if there is a chance of the takeover being resurrected in some form, and we'll maybe come on to that. But if there is, then that's fine and important. For me, it's the same thing as watching football with nobody in the stadium. It becomes something else. It becomes something else. It's a different sport, and it is a reminder that, and I know this gets misty-eyed and all that shit, but it's a reminder that a club, what is a club? A club is a collection of people who are brought together for a common cause. And, you know, without those people, the club ceases to exist. Now, I know it exists in terms of a business. I know it exists in terms of all those other things, but these are community assets. And again, this is another reason why the trust is important, to serve as that conscience, and to remind people that it is, about people. And yeah. I think the cause of pushing the Premier League and football in general, by the way, not just the Premier League, to embrace a form of transparency, to speak to people in a language that is both human and recognisable and understandable, is incredibly important. I think we have to, you know, I think there has to be caveats with things like this. I am not suggesting for a moment that the Premier League is the devil, and I'm not even suggesting that they've got something wrong in this whole process, because the point is we don't know. We've heard one side of it, and that side of it is very persuasive because it's what people want to hear, because it's the people trying to buy the club. But we don't know. You know, we do not know. I do have a measure of empathy for them because they've been stuck in the middle of this, like Newcastle fans have, like Newcastle the club has. And it sometimes felt like it's been a long, long way removed from this football club that's based in the northeast of England, trying to get better. It's felt like this has been transposed to the Middle East and it's become something else. The Premier League have been in the middle of it as well. And I'm sure, just like the main parties, kind of laughably, have been tied to non-disclosure agreements, they are as well. And all of that stuff must be very difficult. But at the end of it, there has to be a better way for things like this to be dealt with. And there has to be a way, as I say, for football to speak to the people that make up clubs, and for processes like this to be gone through, whether it's about having independent bodies looking at owners and directors test or whatever. There just has to be a better way than this, because it's intolerable. And they've, whether wittingly or unwittingly, they've made this ordeal worse. And I've said this to Alex in our chats, that I think that's a noble cause to fight for. It might not benefit Newcastle this time around, but it might benefit others.
Yeah, I've had that conversation with people as well, where they're saying, well, it's done and it's dead now, so what are you still kind of kicking your feet about? And I think part of it is, from a football fan's point of view, I wouldn't like to see anybody else go through this, but they really shouldn't have to. Do you know what I mean? There should be systems and there should be processes in place to ensure that this kind of thing doesn't happen. And when there is a takeover or a big decision that needs to be made, it's done with transparency, and it's not smoke and mirrors, and it's not hidden behind jargon and all that sort of stuff. And it's just, again, it's another example of the fans being the last ones to know, of being left out the loop when anything to do with football that's important is being decided. And we're always, always the ones at the bottom of the pile with stuff like this, whether it's to do with standing in stadiums or whether it's to do with away days being rescheduled for TV and stuff like that. We are always the last ones to be considered when it comes to this. Because as you've said in the past, George, the money talks, and it's all about the money, and it always will be. And I mean, the feelings have been a bit raw over the last couple of days. And I have to be honest, when we recorded that podcast on Thursday or Friday morning, when it was after the news broke, I probably wasn't in the best place to be speaking about this, because I had just kind of, it had exhausted me completely. I had run out of energy for it. But now, a couple of days later, having seen the things that I've seen on Twitter happening and on social media, the stuff that's came out of the trust, the conversations, reading the articles on The Athletic and all that sort of stuff, there's a renewed sort of sense of of determination, and actually it's fueled by quite a lot of anger. This isn't going away. Do you know what I mean? We're not going away. We're not just going to sit down this time. It's just, something has to change now, because if it doesn't, we'll continue like this for the next 10, 20, 30 years, where fans are always the last ones to be thought of. We're at the bottom of the pile. We're the ones getting the shit shoveled on us from above, and we're the ones who keep this going. And without us, the whole lot collapses, and they need to start remembering that.
Well said.
Hi there, I'm David Ornstein, and I've launched a brand new show on YouTube, Ask Ornstein, where I answer questions from our Athletic subscribers. To get your question answered, simply leave a comment at the bottom of my column every Monday, and I'll choose my favourites. To watch the show, head over to the TIFO Podcast YouTube channel, and a new episode will be up every Tuesday afternoon.
I was just going to say, you make a good point about money. Money does talk, and kind of football fans themselves sometimes forget where that money comes from. It doesn't come from anywhere else. It only comes from us.
Comes from you.
George made the point before about TV subscriptions and the game tonight, and it's the richest game in the world. Well, why is it the richest game in the world? Because we pay to watch it. You know, we pay for it. Like it's such a weird thing that the Premier League and like, you know, there's been some pretty serious allegations made by Amanda in George's piece, you know, about two other Premier League football clubs working against this deal. And it's like, even if you're a fan, forget about Saudi Arabia for a minute and forget about Newcastle United. I think any Premier League fan should not want other clubs to jeopardise the future of their own club. The whole point of football, it's 11 of your blokes trying to take on 11 of theirs, and would work out on the pitch who takes away the points and who scores the most goals. And yes, that's been corrupted by money and by all sorts, but essentially that is the beauty, and that's why it's such a insanely popular game around the world. Is it now the case of, oh, actually my team actually gets to pick your owners and we get to give an okay? And that's the whole thing just makes you think, like, Jesus Christ, like, how it's going to have to stop somewhere. So, some set of supporters down the line is going to have to stand up to this. And it may as well be us, because I think no one can do it better than us. So,
oh, definitely not.
Like, let's do it. Let's take them on and try and get some answers. And the trust, that is our aim. We have a plan through the Football Supporters Association. We already have a request in. There is a meeting on the 19th scheduled with some other clubs, but we want a one-on-one meeting, or we'll raise it in that meeting on the 19th of August. But it's, you know, let's try, and if the Premier League won't speak to us, then they'll have to go through. We'll have to go through the channels, through our local MPs, councillors, that kind of thing. This isn't blown over, as someone once said.
No, I mean, you're right. You have to. I always think about you know, like, hell hath no fury like a Newcastle United fan who's been scorned, and. The best days at St James's Park are when something's gone wrong early and we've had a bad decision against us, or someone's not been. Yeah, but you know, like, I don't mean like something's gone wrong early, as in we've shanked the ball into our own net or somebody didn't pick up their runner. Yeah, I mean, when a decision's gone against us, or when something has changed the course of the game unfairly against us, and the feeling inside that stadium is like nothing else. It's just absolutely amazing when everyone is put together to hate one thing. The power behind that is just ridiculous. And the one that springs to mind to me, I don't know if you guys remember this, it was a few years ago, and we played Chelsea at home. I think it was around about 2012. And in the first minute of the game, Demba Ba breaks through. Or maybe in Papi Cissé, I can't remember, it was one of the two.
No, it was Demba Ba.
It was Demba Ba, and he got brought down by David Luiz, and he was the last man, and the ref bottled the red card. I've never heard a stadium like it in my life. The noise, and the there was spit all over the back of my neck off the bloke behind me. It was just, it was scary. And I thought, oh, this ref's going to have to sneak out of here today. And I just remember thinking, this is when we're best. This is when we are... You know, this is when we're most united, is when we feel like the world's against us and we're kicking and screaming to get answers. And that's what it feels like at the minute. And I hope that some of that kind of feeling can spill over into this process, and that we can actually start to come together a little bit, because we're never better than when we're all united like that, when we're all against one thing.
Yeah, totally agree. And I remember the another good example is when that bloke, that referee, decided to give Burton Albion a free kick because Matt Ritchie scored a penalty against them. It was like, no.
Yeah, that's right.
it turned a run-of-the-mill Tuesday night game against Burton Albion at home into this, like, fire pit
World
of
War
anger.
III, wasn't it?
And you had Rafa on the pitch trying to fight him, I think.
Yeah.
just because it was just one of those things you don't often see in the football pitch. I miss the Championship sometimes.
Yes.
I miss the absolute absurdity of it, yeah.
I miss winning every week. I mean, that was a great feeling. I don't sort of miss, do I miss the grind of it? I don't know, because then the Premier League has been a grind since the club came back there as well. So I don't know, there's a lot to be said. There's a lot to be said for winning matches and being happy about the way your football team play, whatever the division is, it has to be said. I want to ask a question, and I think this is, I think there's so much kind of confusion on, you know, whether it's social media. And I don't know how to, I mean, at the moment, I still feel sort of exhausted by the whole thing. Mm, but my question is, and I'll try and answer it as well, how should we feel now? Do we feel sad? Do we feel angry? Do we feel that there's hope left? Or should we be looking at next season and thinking, you know, we're in trouble here? Or is it a combination of all those things? But how should we feel, Alex, at the moment?
Yeah, there's different stages of grief, isn't there? So I think everyone Thursday, Friday last week was, you know, felt just, it was a feeling of devastation. And there was always that niggly feeling in the back of your mind, wasn't there? Like, everything had come and gone. Every checkpoint, so you were like, oh, well, they've got to do Project Restart, so that's fair enough. Then it was like, right, well, the games are going on and they've got to concentrate on all that. And then they've got to get the end of season out of the way. And once kind of you got to the start of last week after that dreadful Liverpool game that we played, doubt really started to creep in the fact that it was clear that, you know, Steve Bruce, for God's sake, was coming out and saying, like, give us a decision. And even Steve Bruce couldn't move the bastards, no one can. And it was just, so it felt off, but there was that awful feeling. And at the Trust, we kind of spoke and just thought, like, Jesus Christ, what we're going to do here? And am I going to have to go back to Lee Darnley and say, come have a meeting? And probably, yes, we will if things go back. And then I think your piece, George, like I said earlier, kind of galvanised people. And to hear from someone as influential as Amanda Staveley and to hear the emotion and the passion and get the inside story. And you know what it was? Forget about what she said. It was just communicative. It was just, here's what's happened. Here's how we feel. And again, it was just so alien to what we're used to from not just Newcastle, but football at the minute. That then galvanised people. And the feed, you know, 3,000 extra people have joined the Trust on Sunday. That's a lot of Newcastle fans. It's a lot of people that fit in your living room. If you wanted to try and talk to them, it's...
Yeah, just to give a massively shameless plug as well, Alex, that piece that you're talking about, that article with the interview with Amanda Staveley is available to read for free on theathletic.com at the minute if you visit athletic.com/NewcastlePod and take advantage of the 30-day free trial. I have to get that in, otherwise my contract will be finished and I will be fed, mashed up and shaped into sausages and fed to Chris. That's how it works. So I have to get those little plugs in now and again. But no, sorry, go on, carry on.
Yeah, I think that's the George's question. There is a feeling of unity coming to, between the fan base, and people are energised and people want to do something. I mean, I put on Twitter yesterday, I got over 3,500 emails over the weekend, which is nice.
Bloody hell.
Creates its own problems. But
some penis enlargement pills again, is it? I keep getting them myself, mate. Do you know what I mean? It's the ones from my girlfriend that really hurt.
Someone has been listening to some local podcast and signed me up for some sort of pubic hair trimming. They're getting loads of spam about that. But yeah, and most of them were people wanting to show us what they've done, saying, here's what we've sent to Chion Ure, who's been great, by the way, with all this. Here's what we've sent to RMP. Here's what we've sent to Richard Masters. And that wasn't people who were doing that because of the Trust. That was people off their own back who've taken a couple of hours out of their day to try and make a difference. So you have this mass of people who are angry, who want answers. And at the Supporters Trust, listen, I'm not going to accuse the Premier League of any wrongdoing or anything like that if they speak to us and give us answers. The problem you've got, and people talk about corruption and stuff like that, is because they don't speak to anyone, because they don't view us as worthy enough to know how they've approached this or what they've done. It's the same with Mike Ashley and Newcastle United over the last 13 years. Newcastle have done loads of things wrong, But some of the worst accusations, mental stuff, like, remember Alan Pardew got the manager's job because he had a gambling debt and weird stuff like that. Those kind of conspiracy theories grow in silence without information and proper information and communication.
Well, and it's a great point. It's a great point, Alex, and it's something I've said before, and it's, I will always have a measure of empathy for Newcastle managers, whoever they are, and certainly it's the case with Steve Bruce now, that they're left to swing. They're left to swing absolutely on their own. And again, we've talked about it on here, about how Lee Charnley said this season that he would communicate more, and there's been none of it. And so the manager always gets left in a position where what they say is examined to the nth degree, to a point where it's almost becomes meaningless, and they're always going to contradict themselves if they do that, because they get no protection from anyone around them at the club. And again, a club isn't about one person. It's not just about the manager. It doesn't have to be this sort of one personality who is hailed for being a genius or hailed for being a clown. There should be some middle ground in which everybody is talking. And that is a big problem. And it is that communication. It's that communication part of it. It should be the easiest part of the job. It honestly should. It should be easy to talk to people. And Newcastle have made it the hardest thing of all. And again, in this saga, it's been the most difficult thing of all, and it has allowed conspiracy theories. It's allowed other people to come step into the vacuum, and it's allowed some of the worst, conspiracy theories of all to sort of fester. And none of that is healthy, and all of it is counterproductive.
I've said before on this podcast as well that this should be a piece of piss for someone who's apparently a brilliant salesman, but it's just never been the case, has it? And I've made the point before on the podcast that it feels like such an open goal, but it's just never been put away. We just can't get across the line, can we, George? Do you know what I mean? That's how it feels, and it's the frustration of that. And the lack of communication is just, like you say, Alex, it's almost a kind of, you're not important enough to know about this stuff, so I don't know what you're going on about. Just keep giving us your money, shut your face and fill the stadium and do as you're told, and that's it. And it's just this sort of belittling feeling of football fans, and it just keeps coming back again and again and again. Do you like beer? Do you like free beer? As a valued listener, we'd like to bestow upon you just that. Thanks to our very good pals at beer52.com, you have the opportunity to sip 8 delicious, painstakingly sourced craft beers from around the world. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/tyne and cover the postage of just $4.95. And if that wasn't enough, as a listener, put on the Tyne.
Taylor,
what?
Taylor.
What, George? What?
Is this about cans? Are you? Is this seriously about cans? Are you trying to take the piss out of every single Newcastle fans listening to this?
I just get the scripts and I read them, man.
Is there no thought to your audience here? Because this is outrageous. Do you know what? I've been feeling tired. I've been feeling depressed, and now I just feel absolutely bloody furious again. God, carry on.
I am sorry. I should really have thought about this, shouldn't I, before I started reading about beers and cans and things. As if that wasn't enough, as a listener to Pod on the Tyne, you'll get 2 extra free beers. So that's 10 free beers. 10 free beers, George. What would you do with that?
There's beer no 52... excuse to drink them now.
Beer 52 are beer pioneers. They traverse the globe to find the best and most interesting beer from a great small batch breweries that planet Earth has to offer. No surprise, then, that they are the world's most popular craft beer discovery club. Each month, Beer 52 delivers a case with a different theme, and themes have included things such as Germany, Korea, Belgium, South Africa, California, New Zealand, despair, misery, embarrassment, and lots of other things, many more, but they haven't forgotten their roots. As an independent UK beer company, Beer 52 are also passionate about the UK craft beer scene. The beauty of Beer 52 is that you can leave at any time and withdraw your bid. The power is in your hands, as well as the best, most interesting
bid.
Beer company.
Bid? You cans? Oh, no. I have to do this all over again.
Oh,
pull it together, George. The beauty of beer 52 is that you can leave at any time. The power is in your hands, as well as the best, most interesting beer money can buy. Your case will include the award-winning craft beer magazine Ferment, which explains the theme and individual beers you'll receive, and a beery snack is thrown in just to top it all off. If you don't like dark beers, you can choose the light plan. It's as easy as that. Just go to beer52.com/tyne and get your case free. And don't forget, right now, Pod on the Tyne listeners get two extra free beers to drown their sorrows. Take care.
That's one of the key things with this conversation I had with Amanda on Saturday night. One of the just key things I'll always remember about it, assuming I don't get the chance to speak to her again, is that she massively talked up not just the football club in the area, but she massively talked us up as fans. That, to her, one of the most incredible things about what they were trying to do was the supporters. And it was so refreshing to hear us viewed as this massive positive rather than a massive negative, which is how it's come across at times from the people who run the club now. We are the biggest asset, and that's what she said. We are the biggest asset of this football club, and it's so refreshing. And it shouldn't be. It should be this. Well, yeah, obviously we know that.
Yeah,
but it wasn't. It was like I was like, wow, and like, you know, it was just, it's so sad because we're here talking about this on this podcast because it hasn't gone through. It's so sad that someone, if it doesn't get rescued, that someone with that passion for not just the everything, you know, not just the almost the assets of the club, the actual who the club exists for, to be passionate about them would just be such a welcome breath of fresh air compared to what we've had. And that's, you know, it's sad, really. It's sad that it's turned out the way it has, and you know, it's gone the way it's gone.
One thing that I do want to clarify is something that I've kind of been asked about a few times in Twitter, and it's something that, you know, I've then asked about is could the deal not come back in a different form, i.e. without PIF and with the Rubin brothers in the leading role, as we know, they're immensely wealthy. But that's just not part of the equation at the minute, because they are committed. They're committed to this deal. They're committed to this group and the way it's been formulated. And so that's just not something that's on the table. We did see, I mean, it was quite difficult to read some of that stuff that the race course talked about yesterday, sort of in the statement released kind of on behalf of the Rubin brothers, in which they talked about some of the projects that were sort of on the go, what they were considering about having a major sporting hub in the city and kind of the investment that would have entailed. And I think that is the thing. I mean, at this stage, it's easy to talk about what they would have done at the point when they're not going to do it. But I think the real crash for me is that sense that there was a chance to do something, yes, that would have been absolutely transformative for the club and the way the club acted and the way the club was in relation to the city and the people in the city, but also that there would have been those kind of knock-on effects around the place. So, I mean, I to answer my own question, how are we supposed to feel? I find it so difficult to come to a resolution. I think sort of mentally, when that all happened on Thursday and Friday, my response was, okay, fine. We're moving, you know, it's not fine.
It's done.
At all.
Move on.
It's done. Let's move on. This has been 4 months in this bit of the process. It's been a year, 14 months in terms of having conversations with the people involved. And, you know, beyond that, it's 3 years. And it's just time, you know, we don't want this to be the case, but we have to just focus back on the now and hope that the club can find a way to kind of muddle through again. And and then sort of as those days have kind of gone on, and you know, it's apparent that they haven't gone away, and that there is this move to put pressure on the Premier League, and there is this restating of a commitment to a deal that is no longer on the table. I mean, that's the sort of bizarre thing. That's the thing that I think I find it difficult to get my head around, how you get from a position where you've withdrawn from the deal but are still committed to it, and what is it therefore that, where does the logjam get sort of unplugged? Where does that happen? Is it by the Premier League now saying, okay, well, we're going to back down, we'll compromise on what we're asking for? Is that, or is it about putting pressure on the, you know, politicians or whoever putting pressure on the Premier League to let it go through. I just struggle to sort of see that. And I, as I say, I'm certainly guilty by association, if nothing else, of giving people false hope over the last 4 months. And I'm very conscious of not wanting to go down that route until I know for definite that something is on the cards. Equally, I don't blame people for fighting for it at all, because the alternative is very difficult to bear. But I have to say that my feeling is still one of sort of tiredness and an assumption that this is where we'll be for the foreseeable future. I hope I'm wrong on that, but I think for the good of my own sort of sanity, I think I have to sort of assume that we're going to be stuck in this position.
Yeah, unfortunately, chaps, time is no longer our friend, and we're going to have to start thinking about wrapping this up now. Just before we do, though, I just want to say to you, Alex, keep it up, mate. Keep fighting the good fight. Keep doing what you're doing, and get the word out about the trust and anything that we can do or anything I can do to help as well. Just let me know, and we'll definitely be on board and we'll be involved. It's going to be a weird couple of months, I think, this next few months, and we'll see what happens. But thanks so much for coming on and for the information and for doing everything that you're doing at the moment. I only speak on behalf of myself, not everybody else, but it is important. Whoa, hello. Bit of jazz there.
That's what happens if that was me. That's what happens if you look at Twitter. I was just looking at Twitter then. It went to the Independence website and it played a video. So I'm sorry. I really
see me trying to be all sort of.
I was bored, Taylor.
Oh, okay. I don't blame you, mate. To be honest, I've talked absolute shit.
I was just saying. Oh my god, it's doing it again. I've done it again. I'm so sorry. There we go. I had to get off this Twitter page.
You just don't like anybody else having a voice on this podcast, Corkin, isn't it? That's what it is. See, you've managed to get rid of Chris. Where is he? He's not even on holiday, is he? He's in a bin bag somewhere. That's what it is.
Shall I tell you what he's doing? He's getting married.
What's
today.
He doing? He's getting married.
Yeah, I don't know if I should say that or not, but I have, yeah.
And you didn't get an invite?
Well, he couldn't have a wedding, could he? Couldn't have a proper wedding.
Couldn't have a proper wedding? What's he doing?
Were you not allowed? You're not allowed to have a proper wedding, are you? Well, you're not allowed to have proper weddings with loads of people there, are you? Because of social distancing and all that and the corona. So he's having to do a little one.
Closest friends in the world, me and you, might have got an invite.
No, there's no one there. It's just him and his bride eating sausages.
Reception in Greg's.
Absolutely. So congratulations, Waffles. I've blown your cover. I don't know if you'll appreciate that at all, but we love you very much and we're very proud of you. Alex, Taylor did say all that very nice stuff, which I completely interrupted and I apologise. But please remind us how fans can go about joining the Trust, please.
Yeah, you can head to the Trust website, which is nufctrust.co.uk. Hit join. You pay £1 for a share, which lasts for life, and then there's an annual membership of £1. You can also find us on social media at NUFC Trust. We would absolutely love to have you along, and every single member makes us stronger. Your voice really matters as a Newcastle United fan, and the best chance we think of you getting your voice heard is through us. We're stronger together. And thanks, lads, for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely, Alex. No problem. We'd be happy to have you back anytime. Come back and speak to us soon, yeah?
Definitely.
Great stuff. George, thanks very much, mate.
You all right?
All right. Look after yourself. Get back to your independent article on Twitter.
It was about the takeover, so I thought I'll just have a little look just to make sure there's nothing important in that. Right. I feel terrible now. I've ruined it. Everything.
And so you should. Time. Hang your head. Disgraceful behaviour. Anyway, thanks very much, everybody, for listening. Look after yourselves out there. And, of course, get yourselves onto theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to take advantage of that 30-day free trial and read all of those lovely articles for free at the moment, especially that one that Alex was talking about earlier on about Amanda Staveley and her call to arms for Newcastle United fans. Look after yourselves. Take care. And it is very much a case of what happens next. See you later.